First communicator, Leslie Flint's guide, Mickey. Second communicator, Dr. Charles Marshall. Third communicator, Stephen Ward.
This sound was recorded on the 21st of September, 1964, medium Leslie Flint. Response.
Hi, Mickey.
How are you, Rosie?
Hello, dear. I'm all right, darling, thank you. Yes? That's all he's going to say to me. I'm glad you've come.
Well, I don't come perhaps quite so much as I used to, but not from the point of view of coming to speak, because of Stephen, as well as anything.
Yes.
Because he's become such an excellent communicator and is always, morally, I think he's always interesting, sometimes he's highly amusing too. Depends on what vibration he happens to come through.
It's been a
tremendous help. These sittings have helped him tremendously.
Yes.
And he's very drawn here, which is a quite understandable when you realize that, as I've often said to you, there's an innumerable number of us that are all linked together.
Yes.
In past ages, we're in a sense what is termed a group soul.
I think that is why I was full of emotion with them, because we were sort of connected in this band.
Yes, that was in the picture, of course, although you didn't realize it at the time. Of course, that is so. The unconscious knowledge or realization.
I've been trying to get to understand myself, you see, because I never met him or anything like that, and yet I was most emotional over his suicide.
Well, that was because, as I say, the old ties are not really ever broken, and though you don't remember the associations, they still have very strong part to play. I think that it's something which is, in a sense, difficult to explain or difficult to understand if one tries to explain, but we're all linked, all of us, and some of us are on different stratas, it's true, some are more advanced, more developed than others, but we have that link which time cannot break, indeed, which time strengthens, if anything.
Yes.
It brings us closer together, and the sympathy that you felt was a natural reaction to the man and the circumstances of his death, and of course, much more deep-seated was this link with the past, where it has been so strong. And I'm not a bit surprised that the communication between the pair of you is very good. You seem to respond so well to him, and he finds great joy and happiness in coming to speak here. It's been a great help to him, although in a sense, there again, I wouldn't say he didn't need help. I suppose everyone really needs help, but the point is that he himself is an old soul, and it wasn't in a sense too bad. I think he was a little bit overwhelmed by various things when he first came, the impact of it all, and the suddenness of his passing, and the thought forces of the earth which weighed heavily upon him.
And
all that's gone, you see.
Thank God.
Hello, Rosie.
Hello.
Have you been having a chat to the doctor? Actually, when I was talking to you about books,
yes.
I suppose it was a train of thought with me as well, because actually I've been reading a great deal. That may surprise you when you think that, of course, there are innumerable ways of learning here.
There
are vast libraries, and one of the things that's intrigued me so much is the vastness of some of these buildings and the contents, but I have been very interested in books,
yes.
And not so much that I'm necessarily reading a great deal. I have been reading, of course, but it's extraordinarily fascinating because I should imagine every book of any note of any real value, that is there.
Yes.
And strangely enough, although I was teasing you about poor Mr. Dickens, I have met him, and he's the most extraordinary personality and a wonderful personality.
Who's this?
Dickens.
Oh, yes, Dickens.
And he's told me that a lot of the characters that he created have a form of life of their own, and that while people still read his books, or any
yes.
book for that matter, where the characters are very well drawn, they do have a form of substance. It's not that they're ordinary people, of course, in the sense of
yeah.
you and I, but within the range of which in which they've been written, they have a form of existence and life. And
yes.
it's extraordinary how they can impinge themselves on the mentality or the mind of readers of that particular book in which they appear, for instance, that they can bring a realization of the period and of the story and of the people in the story to the personal persons of the reading. It's an
yes.
extraordinary thing. I had no idea of this. In fact, he was trying to explain to me that that authors, without realizing it, possibly, although they know they're creating something because it's from within themselves and they're creating characters and incidents and so on, that as they go on and they become enthusiastic and they enter into the mentality or the spirit of the character, so and as that character becomes more formed and more complete, and as that character then becomes more and more understood and read by the general public,
yes.
so that they have a form of existence. Evidently it's something which is quite fascinating, because not only do real experiences of people not only are their experiences and lives registered, as it were, on the etheric vibration or the ether or the atmosphere around the earth, but also these people, these characters. Of course, anyone who would see them would know that they are, in a sense, puppets. They're not realities, but they are, within their circumscribed limits, they are very real in themselves. It's most fascinating to me, because you see, all life is created by the power of thought. If we accept the realization that everything that is, that is acceptable, that is understood, that makes life, as it obviously is, a tangible thing, fundamentally is thought. And if someone writes vividly about certain characters they've created, they give them a form of life.
Yes.
But if, for instance, after a very long period, those books are not read anymore, they cease to be of interest. In other words, the less interest is shown in a particular book with certain characters that once were very vivid and often read about, if they lose, shall we say, their sort of impact, and people are not so interested or concerned, so the characters, in a strange sense, go through a form of, you can't call it death, of course, but it's the most peculiar state, evidently, that they cease to have any sort of real substance, or they seem to have any, lose a great deal of their presence.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how one can explain this, but this has been shown to me, because I was really intrigued
with these
books and this library, this vast library, and meeting various people there, and having been introduced to Dickens.
Thackeray told me effectively in the same thing,
yes.
you know, make peace Thackeray. He came and spoke to me and told me the same thing.
You see, the same thing applies, although people probably don't realize it, in the theatre, in the acting profession. I mean, for instance, in the first place, an actor has to be highly sensitive. If he's going to be any good at all, he must be hypersensitive.
Yes.
And in a sense, he is a form of medium. And when he starts to study a part and read up a character which he has to portray, particularly in the classics, you take someone like Hamlet or something like that,
yes.
where there is a very complex character to be portrayed, running the whole gamut of emotions and so on, you see,
yes.
when that actor takes upon himself something which is is so powerful, it's very difficult to explain, but nevertheless, he doesn't just create the character for 2 hours and then sort of throw it off. It's an extraordinary thing how the more he reaches out, the more he understands the character, the more he becomes that character. So in a sense, it's his own personality change, and even his own nature can be affected. And there is this sort of tremendous atmosphere around the earth. And in this atmosphere, there are all manner of, I don't like to call them beings, but there are all manner of forms of entity. They're really a mental, mind creation.
But are these forms static, or do they have the power of movement, or what?
Well, firstly, I think it's so important to realize, of course, that they're not people, not in the accepted sense, that they have a form of existence. And I do think this is important to realize, because as I try to explain, if one accepts the power of thought, the creative power of thought, then everything that has been created, particularly anything of real value, it still exists. And it still has a power of attraction, it still has a power which, according to the particular thing that it happens to be, will have an effect upon people, particularly people of a highly sensitive nature, particularly people who, for instance, have chosen a certain profession in which these things must play a part. You take a great musician, music. I mean, when you consider one piece of music that has been composed by one great composer, that it can be played, it can be interpreted in so many different ways, and that all these different interpretations are all interesting in themselves. They're all part, you might say, of the original, and yet they deviate, possibly in many respects, from the original as originally composed and originally played by the composer. But each individual who is an artist, each person who is a creative being that takes upon himself to play that particular piece of music, will give an interpretation which is entirely his own. But it does not alter the fact that there are occasions when an individual who may have played the same piece of music over and over and over again at recitals, concerts and so on, and plays it almost, you might say, automatically, because it's become so second nature, and that is their interpretation, and they stick to it. But there are times when, much to their amazement or surprise, they hear themselves making a different sound or creating a different interpretation. And people who are trained to listen, who are trained to know, can see the differences, the variation. And the whole point here is that sometimes the composer himself will take over to some extent or impress the individual who is playing a particular piece of music. But you must also remember this, that in the ether, vibrations, which play a vital and important part as far as mankind is concerned, that vibration on different levels can and does intrude itself, perhaps in some cases you would say intrude, in others it plays a very important part because it is a natural law in itself, but there are all manner of vibrations, and this applies in so many different ways. A musician may feel or sense, without fully understanding it, a new vibration, a new sort of realization of how something should be put into being, how it should be interpreted, and he will change his whole technique and his whole outlook in regard to something that has become accepted in his mind and has probably been played for years. It may well be that there are all these different stratas, and in fact I know it is so, that on these different stratas there are reflections, is any word I can think of that I can use now, reflections of the mind of the originator. And these reflections can play upon the mentality of the individual who is endeavouring to do this particular work, whatever it may be, and they find themselves, individuals find themselves, creating something which really, in a sense, is not new. It is a reflection of the original as interpreted by the particular, in this case, composer. In other words, you can have many different interpretations of the same thing, you can have many influences, some which come direct from the individual concerned, others which are, in a sense, relayed through various strata of life and which can reach you second-hand or third-hand, if you like. Then you're going to have what is generally called the composite sort of vibration or idea, which I think possibly a lot of people receive without knowing it and interpret it accordingly, and it becomes an automatic sort of thing without any particular great feeling, because it has lost the original spirit from which it originally came. If only I could explain what I'm trying to get at. Actually, it's also very involved. But it seems to me that we are all subject to all manner of vibrations, and that these vibrations will vary according to the various conditions and stratas of mentality. I won't use the term life, although that does apply in a sense. I mean, there's different stratas of vibration and different stratas of mentalities. Some are, in a sense, dead mentalities, and this is something I want to imply. And when I use the term dead, I don't mean that they're dead from the point of view of having no life, exactly that, but they are dead as far as the original creative thought is concerned, because the original creative thought has long since departed into a much higher realm, or at least the individual in this case, shall we say, has gone so far removed from earthly things that the old idea of thought, which was the creative thought and the original thought, has lost its true meaning and purpose as far as they are concerned. But it is still vibrating, it is still relaying its message, relaying its sort of idea to minds who are receptive, or people particularly who are themselves instruments of some form or other, and they receive. In other words, what I'm trying to convey here is that, for instance, a person who creates, whether it is in a novel, a book, or whether it is in music, whether it is in art, in painting, or whatever it is that has been of a creative nature, which has played and is still possibly playing an important part in the lives of people still on earth, the original creative thought is still there, still vital, still alive.
Still alive on your side?
Yes, and on yours.
On ours too?
Yes, at least around your earth vibration,
oh,
this impinging thought,
yes,
this
yes.
impinging truth, this impinging realization, this impinging desire, you might say,
yes.
of endeavoring to register itself on those who will receive it, so that they too may recreate, and not only recreate, but perhaps in some shape or form, remake and reinterpret something of an original. But the point is, what I'm trying to get at is that while you are receiving the thought force of something which was once very vital and alive and still has life of a kind, but is within a circumscribed limit, it can neither go beyond this point or that, it sort of must be on its one level. The originator, that is, and shall we talk about, if you like, Friedrich Chopin, I mean, his interpretation of perhaps one of his works now would be so different to what his interpretation would have been when he was on earth.
Yes, quite.
Even of the same piece of music. You see, because here he is not limited. In other words, put it this way, you listen to a piece of music which, as far as you are concerned, is perfect. It couldn't be bettered, it couldn't be improved. The point is that as it was played to you, it seems so, and it was so, and in a sense it is so, but only because you are registering on a level or a plane where you can only appreciate or understand or accept that particular interpretation. But the originator, in this case Frederick, of that same piece of music, in his own environment, would have enlarged it to such a degree and improved it to such a degree that although you would still recognize the basis, what has been changed and what has been done to it is so tremendous, because the compass alone is so much more.
Yes.
And then there is no limiting factor, you see. When you are receiving inspiration, and when you are receiving guidance, or when you are receiving something in music or in a book or whatever it may be, it must be and can only be within certain limits, within a certain range. But once one gets away from the earth and gets away from that limitation, then the range is so vast, so tremendous. I mean, for instance, I've listened to music here which is so absolutely fantastic that there's no words in which one could describe it, there's no way in which one could depict it. And although instruments are used, one has the realization that under certain conditions and certain circumstances, that it wouldn't even be necessary for the instruments to be used at all, because the mentality of the individuals who are creating the music is so tremendous and so strong, so powerful, and so wide is their vision and their experience, that they could create by the very self-thought that they have, with their knowledge and their experience and their whole being so registered on our atmosphere, that we could hear sounds where no obvious instrument was being used, at least not from the point of a visual thing. Yes. In other words, that you can be so transported. I have been to recitals, concerts here, where I have listened to this wonderful music, where it seemed as if my whole being was so uplifted that my whole self was transported. I know this almost sounds stupid, but all I can say is that although I have here a body which is as real to me and as physical to me as yours is or anyone's is in your world, it was as if I was being lifted out of this being, this body of mine, which now, of course, is so vastly different to the material that there is such lightness and such freedom of movement. But even so, it seemed as if, as I was listening at times to some of this music, that I was being sort of drawn out of myself and being merged, is the only word I can use, it doesn't really explain it, as if I was being merged into the music or with the music, being transported with the music. And I realize now that so much here that is done in the way of music, in the way of literature, in the way of all forms of art, are all used so that individuals can, by the very being able to feel these things with such a tremendous emotional realization, that it's assisting you and helping you to uplift yourself and to transport you, even if it's only for a fleeting moment, if you like, of time, into something so far removed from even that which one may feel in one's life here is perfection. In other words, although I have no cause for complaint, I have no desire to make any particular change at the moment, in a sense, because I'm quite happy, but there are these moments when one is so transported, it's as if one is so sort of taken up into a sort of conscious state, the fleeting though it is, of something so vastly magical and marvellous and beautiful that in a sense, it's so overwhelming that in a sense you're almost glad to get back again to your own particular state of being, because you just feel that too much of that would be too much.
What is the feeling like? Exhilaration?
Oh, it's a tremendous feeling of exhilaration. It's a tremendous feeling of weightlessness. It's a tremendous feeling of lightness of mind and of spirit. It's a tremendous feeling that there is no time, no space, that everything is so absolutely fantastically beautiful and wonderful that you know that it cannot last for you, because you haven't really reached that stage where you could fully understand it, or fully appreciate it, or fully take part in it.
In other words,
you're given a kind of a vision, if you like, of something that is yet to be. In other words, I think it is the same as, in a very different way perhaps, but it's true to say, as we try to come down to you and give you some sort of faint idea or faint vision of something that is to awaiting you, that is beautiful beyond your comprehension. But we have the same thing when we enter into this other sphere of mind, because it is a sphere of mind. But it's the beauty of
this kind of exhaustion, don't you?
Well, yes, a sort of, yes, because obviously the more highly transported you become, the more carried away you are on these waves of of emotion, because it is an emotion. In a sense, it is a sort of exhaustion that you feel afterwards, because you feel that the, although you don't realize you've made the effort, I suppose in a sense you've contributed towards it, because nothing can be done entirely by others. You must also play your part. In other words, I think it is that all this is done deliberately to give us a slight insight into the things which are still awaiting us, to give us greater confidence in the reality of the life which still stretches out before us, to give us some link and contact with people who are obviously much more advanced, to give us the assurance that we have the opportunity to change and to become more like them and to become more transported as we ourselves become more wise, more understanding, and more able to sort of enter into those conditions which we vaguely sort of comprehended, but to enter into them in such a way when the time comes that we are really ready for them. You see, so much happens here, and so much happens that can't be put into words, so much can't be explained. But all I can say is that everything is a deep emotional experience, and it is the emotional experience that is so tremendous that I wish I could explain to you. But I feel it most, I think, at the moment, through music. I've discovered one thing, that music plays the biggest part, the most important part, more important presumably than anything else. Oh, music is used in so many different ways. It's used in healing, for instance, for people who are, when they first come here particularly, in a very distressed, unhappy state. Vibrational music is used to harmonize and to help them and to sort of create an entirely different aura or condition around them so that they will be more quiet and more sort of at ease, more comforted, more sort of reassured. Music is a tremendous thing here.
It is the finest thing. Sound. There's nothing more wonderful than...
I wish, of course, there were words and ways in which one could describe so much as one feels, because everything here is the intensity of one's feeling. And as you well know, you cannot put words to something often which is so intense.
What are the sounds like on your side of life?
Well, I think the sounds in themselves vary, obviously, according to the individual that's receiving those sounds. In other words, sounds are going out all the time, the vibrations which are being very active, but not everybody necessarily hears all the same sounds. It's as if some people are pitched higher than others or lower than others, and some are receptive to different sounds on a higher note, on a higher vibration, and they will receive the most extraordinary experience through it and listen to the most heavenly music because they are on that particular wavelength or vibration. Others can not probably hear it at all. They probably wouldn't even know what you're talking about if you just tried to describe it to them. Others, of course, may be on an entirely different start of being where they would be completely unconscious of some of these sounds. You see, it all depends on the recipient, on the individual who receives. Some people receive, some don't. Some people on your side are tone deaf, of course. They can't help it, poor dears. But often the person, you can trace the person, quite frankly, the person who just doesn't understand music, or doesn't appreciate music, or doesn't care for music. I'm talking about music of high order. Quite often they are pretty... well, grim people, with all due respect. I mean, they're pretty well, I suppose one shouldn't say that they may have their good qualities, of course, but the point is that they're often very unfeeling, very unsympathetic, and they have very little emotion within themselves, very little sympathy, very little understanding. Often they're very hard and intolerant and difficult. But there again, one mustn't generalize, of course. There are some people, unfortunately, in the world who, for some reason or other, they just cannot understand music and they're not really interested in music. But they're rather exceptional. I think the vast majority of people are drawn to loveliness of sound, loveliness of music. They may not necessarily always comprehend it. I mean, there are many people who don't know a note of music, and in a sense they couldn't care less about music from the point of view who composed it. But they are stirred by it. They are affected emotionally by it. You see, the whole point is that music, or not only music in itself, as you know, but music as we understand it on a much higher plane of thought and vibration, where it is so vastly in some ways superior, so vastly different indeed to earthly music. it's a vital part of existence. Because all life is vibration, but vibration is the very essence in the sense of life. Vibration and the power of thought, these two combined are the creative powers, the powers which make life possible. All this is so important for people to understand, and I do think that if people would be more receptive, would open up their minds and their hearts, not only to music in the sense of music as you know it by orchestra and musician, but the music of life itself, which is all around and about you, flowing within you. If only people would be more sensitive to the realities of life, the importance of life in the highest sense. I know it sounds odd perhaps for me to say these things, but I've discovered that there's so much that people are blind to, that they are in themselves indifferent to. The point is that life, it is important to experience it in all its many facets, in all its many sort of devious ways and routes, and not to be afraid of it. I think that one has to learn from all sorts of experiences and all these different things, even though they seem sometimes to be out of tune, and sometimes they jangle, sometimes they irritate these different aspects of life. Yet they're all linked up with the music of life itself, and they all play a part, and you cannot appreciate the beautiful melody until you've had the experience of other things too. In other words, you've got to, in a sense, compose your life, like a composer would compose music. Mm-hmm. Sometimes he will compose something that is very beautiful. Sometimes he'll compose something that is foreign even to his nature, and he cannot understand why he's even put it to paper, and why he's ever made it possible for it to be interpreted or played. But the point is that all human life is subject to all sorts of vibrations, all sorts of conditions, and if you are going to be anything at all, you've got to, in a sense, be so sensitive to be played upon in all different ways and directions. In other words, you've got to be pliable. At the same time, you've got to accept that every facet of your nature is there for a purpose, and that every lesson that has to be learned is necessary in some way or other for your betterment, and that you must not be afraid to face whatever life may offer, because whatever it may offer is a challenge, and it's only by accepting the challenge that we can hope to achieve. And it's through achieving that we become that much wiser, that much more sensible, that much more understanding, and in consequence, a more highly evolved soul in consequence. Everyone must realize that all life is, in a sense, bound up with vibration, bound up with experience, that life itself is there to be experienced in all its various ways. I mean, not to be afraid of it.
Yes.
I know it sounds odd me saying this when
you consider I
sort of feel that life is an enormous compass, put it like that.
Yes.
And there are so many different notes, and you can make such a mess of your life, and you can keep playing so many wrong notes that you put everything out of tune and other people around and about you. But you can, by thought and consideration and study and making an effort within yourself, to become a reasonably good musician, in a sense, with your life. At least make something of it. You may not be a genius, you may not be a great composer, in the sense of making your life something so magnificent, beautiful, that people will look up to you and, in a sense, find you so far removed from them that they feel you're so far distant. Like, for instance, the great teachers and the great ones of the past, it seems to me that they did so much with their lives, but they knew about life, they knew about themselves. They understood the possibilities within themselves. They realized that they had forces which they could bring forth and they could use and do things which the average person felt was a miracle. A miracle is only something you don't understand. But once you understand how it's brought about, it's no longer a miracle. There is no such things as miracles, really. Everything is natural law, and everyone has the opportunity to make something of themselves and to bring forth from themselves tremendous harmonies and tremendous things which can be a benefit not only to themselves, but to all, to everyone. We should all be doing so much more than we are doing. We're all doing so little. That's a tragedy. So many people are living humdrum existences because they haven't the strength and the character within themselves to exert themselves. And I don't mean by that that everyone wants to be a prime minister or everyone wants to be a film star. I don't mean that at all.
No.
But so many people, admittedly, there are many people who have to live what we term humdrum lives. But the most humdrum life can be a wonderful experience, and it can be a wonderful opportunity to do so much which would benefit so many, and also the individual concerned would in consequence raise himself to such a height that it would surprise him. If only he realized that within himself There are strings that are untouched, that if they were plucked and if they were played carefully, could create the most marvellous, harmonious music of their life. It's all such a tragedy. But then again, of course, that is life. We have to learn, we have to fumble and feel our way and do the best we can, but so many of us don't really try hard enough. We don't really attempt enough. We're content often with the mediocre. We're content with the ordinary, because that's the generally accepted level. That is the tragedy of life, of course, that the vast majority of people, they accept a general level, which is the general standard for the vast majority of people, and they're content with that. They don't seem to realize, and even those who do realize the great possibilities and the power within themselves, do so little about it. They won't exert themselves. They're afraid sometimes even to be different from their neighbor, which is also stupid and ridiculous, because everyone, in their own individual way, can be, in a sense, what is termed a genius. It's an extraordinary thing. People don't realize that a genius isn't always what he seems. Often the genius himself is a genius because he's drawing on powers which are not only from within himself, but from outside. The forces which are all around the earth, which are very vital in the life, can help and will be used. In fact, there is nothing, and nothing there that cannot, in a sense, be tapped. The source of all knowledge, the source of all power, is all around and about you. Scientists, of course, are tapping it in certain ways, but their ways are not necessarily always the right ways. And, of course, often the things that they discover are not used in the way in which they were intended. But all around the earth, there are untold wavelengths, vibrations, which, when used and when drawn upon, can bring into being a way of life and an experience of life which is so far in advance, so superior to anything you know now, there is nothing that is impossible for man if only he will raise himself mentally and spiritually to the highest level that it is feasible or possible for him to do. And in a sense, there's even no limit to that, because man himself is a spiritual being while yet on earth, and if he realizes the fundamental truth that he is already, while yet on earth, a spirit, and that he has spiritual faculties, spiritual powers that are dormant within him, latent there, that can be drawn out, that he can tune himself, he can make it possible to listen to notes, to chords, strike chords, on the vibration of the outer world, all around your world, which could so raise him beyond anything he could comprehend at the moment. But it's all there, it's possible. Man has power there.
Learn how to do it.
Yes, but you can only do that by effort, and you can only do that by the concentration of your will and your thought on tapping these sources and contacting the entities that will come from other worlds and other spheres to assist you and help you. Once we see people who are striving and struggling and endeavoring to make a contact and to do something, really do something, then we impinge ourselves upon them and help them. But so few do. So many are just content anyway, as you well know, even those you call spiritualists, content to sit around on the fringe and sit in a circle and twiddle their thumbs and get nowhere and ask stupid, vaporous questions.
It's quite right.
Well, I know it's true. I've been to some of these dooms, and honestly, it's like a circus. Anyway, I must go. Cheer up and don't get too down the dumps, and I'm going to work on you and Marshall's going to work on you, and if we can't do it, we'll bring Francis. Anyway, I must go.
Malcolm, who's Malcolm?
I said Francis.
Oh, Francis.
God bless. Bye-bye, Rose.
Bless you.
Bye-bye, Rose. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye, Richie, darling.
Talked it tonight.
Oh, lovely.